Scripture lesson for this evening's message comes from the Gospel according to John. I'll be reading from the 18th chapter, verse 33 down through 37. Then Pilate entered the headquarters again, summoned Jesus, and asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus answered, "Do you ask this on your own, or did others tell you about me?" Pilate replied, "I am not a Jew, am I? Your own nation and the chief priests have handed you over to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not from this world. If my kingdom were from this world, my followers would be fighting to keep me from being handed over to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not from here." So Pilate asked him, "So you're a king, right?" Jesus answered, "You say that I'm a king. For this I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice." Here ends the reading. May God grant us wisdom and courage for interpretation. Honestly, I can sort of sympathize with Pilate here in the scripture reading because I know how uneasy I personally feel whenever someone starts telling me that they know the real truth. I start looking for the exits. Now, I'm not objecting to honesty, which is a noble and a high virtue, but that's usually not what people are talking about when they say in a certain way, "I know the real truth." That's often the opening line of many a conspiracy theory, one usually these days filled with what you might call alternative facts. My first thought to myself is usually, "Uh-oh, what am I about to get myself into when someone starts a conversation? I know the real truth," as opposed to the one apparently that I think I know. Now, in Pilate's life experience, if his life experiences were anything like ours, we can understand why he took such a cynical view. But as we look more closely at this exchange between Pilate and Jesus, we can see that the two were not talking about the same thing. In essence, they were kind of talking right past one another. But one of the charges that had been brought against Jesus was that he had claimed to be the, quote, king of the Jews. But actually, there's no record that we have of Jesus ever making that claim about himself. But others made that claim about him. Even as early as the time of his birth, the Magi came asking, "Where is the child who has been born king of the Jews?" That was in Matthew chapter 2. At the beginning of Jesus' public ministry, when he called Nathanael to be a disciple, you might recall Nathanael replied, "Rabbi, you're the Son of God. You are the King of Israel." That was a little earlier in the book of John. And as recently as a few days before his arrest, Jesus rode a donkey in Luke's gospel into Jerusalem. The crowds welcomed him, shouting, "Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord." Now, it's important to understand the Jews were not a free people at this time, and therefore they had no political right to name their own king. So Palestine was a province of the Roman Empire, and for anybody other than Caesar to rise up and declare himself king would have been perceived by the Romans as a threat to their rule. And so Governor Pilate, as the local representative of Rome, had to be concerned about anyone rumored to have made such a claim. So his first question to Jesus, likely standing there in chains right before him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Pilate wants to determine whether the prisoner, in other words, is a threat to the state. There follows an exchange where Jesus asks whether Pilate is really concerned that he is a threat, or whether someone, and I think we know who, meaning the religious authorities, is manipulating the governor. Eventually, though, Jesus answers Pilate's question by saying, "My kingdom is not of this world." Another translation would be, "My kingdom is not in this world or a part of the conventional world. So Pilate asks and responds, well, so you are a king then. Kind of a backhanded re-questioning, missing altogether that Jesus is trying to define himself differently from how the Roman Empire views his kingship. Jesus answers, oh, well, you say I'm a king. That tells Pilate that his understanding of kingship is inadequate to Jesus' role, which Jesus goes on to explain this way. Remember, we read it, for this I was born, for this I came into the world to testify to the truth. Everyone who belongs to the truth, he concluded, listens to my voice. And this then led Pilate to a mocking reply. What is truth? And that is the title of our message this evening. What is truth? Pilate understood enough of what Jesus said to realize that Jesus, his prisoner, was no danger to Rome, but the governor did not get on board with the rest of what Jesus said. That his sovereignty, that in other words, the realm to which Jesus' kingship, he was saying, was applying, was certainly not to a geographical location. He wasn't saying he was king of a certain area or to a certain group of people, but Jesus was saying he was a representative of truth itself. In fact, earlier in John's gospel, Jesus is quoted as having identified himself as truth. I am the way, the truth, and the life. And here with Pilate, Jesus says that truth is something to which everyone who listens can belong. Now, I find it very significant that Jesus, or John on Jesus' behalf here, the author, chose this word, belong, in reference to the truth, which implies something different than what most of the arguments you hear nowadays seem to imply. Belonging to the truth implies that truth can possess us, rather than people having a corner on the market for truth, which implies we can take truth for ourselves or possess it. Our own truth. Jesus could have said, everyone who corners the market on the truth listens to my voice, but he didn't. And I think that is why I'm so bothered when people advertise their group, oh, we've got the truth. Our group is the only true group or church or whatever. So I find it significant, this word belonging to the truth. And to see the difference here between belonging to the truth and assuming you can corner the market on the truth, consider three basic tests of truth that classic mainstream philosophy offers when we're asking the question, what is truth? What is reality? The first in classical philosophy is correspondence theory. Now, that's a big word, but let me step back and explain it. In other words, truth, in this view of the correspondence theory, is the agreement between a statement of fact, I say it's true, and an actual fact, it actually checks out and is true. So, for example, if someone sells you a device for your automobile that claims to double your gas mileage, sounds great, doesn't it? But after being installed, it makes absolutely no difference when you test it. Then there is no correspondence between the claim that this thing, this device, will double your gas mileage and that it actually does, you see? There's no correspondence, and so you can conclude that the claim is not truth. But the correspondence theory has significant limitations as a test for truth, because many situations offer no opportunity to check a claim against a fact. If, for example, someone says, now you're going to go to heaven if you just follow Jesus, there's no way to verify that by correspondence, since in this life we have no access to the fact or reality of anything else. We can't check that, so to speak, come back and say it corresponds in this way. The second classical truth test is the coherence theory. Something is true in this regard if it is consistent with other judgments already accepted to be true. For example, if I say, you can finish the sentence, if you play with fire, you're going to burn. You'll likely accept that as true because it in no way contradicts your previous experiences with fire. But there are limitations to this coherence kind of a theory. If your initial system of judgments is incorrect, new errors could be consistent with the errors in your initial judgment in that system. So if you start with the assumption, for example, that the white race is superior to all others, and then you read the papers or scan all of the backwoods of the internets to find a black person who does something stupid, that doesn't contradict your racist presumptions. But that does not make your racist view correct, does it? You started with a flawed system of ideas based on racist presumptions. The third classical truth test is a pragmatic theory. Now, I'll be honest, I get sucked into this one more than I should. Truth is what works in this regard or gives satisfactory results. So, you know, but some beliefs, here's the thing, they might work for a while, only to be shown unworkable later. Churches are the worst at this. They find something. Hey, let's throw a corn festival in our purple gazebo one year. 79 years later, they're still throwing a corn festival in a purple gazebo with the same two ancestors of the people that started it and no one else. And it was supposed to be outreach. So, I mean, just because something works one day doesn't mean it will always work the next and the next and the next and the next and the next. So all of these three tests, they're helpful in making decisions about what could be true. But as I said, all three have their limitations, and answers of unshakable certainty will continue to elude us no matter how badly we want certainty. Now there's another way to think about truth, and I kind of enjoy this too, is to consider what truth is not. For starters, believe it or not, truth is not always the majority opinion. Now, while this may seem obvious, consider how often we accept something as true simply because it seems to be believed by most people, or at least this is the case, most of the people that I know or that you know. But the truth is, the majority can easily and are often wrong. And at one time, most people believed the world was flat. A few may still. I think there was a professional basketball player not long ago, I'm sure he's an expert on it, but he declared, Kyrie Irving said, I think the earth is still flat. Didn't go over well. We know better. There's another way to think about what truth is not. Not only is it not the majority opinion, but truth is not an edict. In other words, whether it is from the president of this country or any other country, whether it's from the Pope or any leader of any other church, or the smartest individual, or the smallest individual in the world, no matter how noble any of these sources may or may not be, they cannot guarantee their decisions will be the truth, simply because they say it as an edict and proclaim it. In the 17th century, Galileo was hauled before the church inquisition for his claim the sun, not the earth, was the center of the universe. He was forced to recant, but that did not change the truth of his scientific assertion, and it took the church until 1993, by the way, when the Vatican officially apologized, and it was rather half-hearted. And yet they led to his demise for proclaiming the truth. Truth is also not something we can just sense or feel all of the time. Now, many people have said, and I've said it myself, you know, I can just tell when someone is lying, only to discover later that we were wrong. Sometimes we're right. Sometimes we're wrong when we put out feelers like that. Our instincts can be conditioned by all kinds of variables and elements of our environment, by our upbringing. And sometimes they can be really reliable guides, but sometimes we're just plain wrong when we go with our gut. There's nothing wrong with going with your gut when it seems right. Sometimes it's not right. Truth is also not pure logic or pure reason. Now, this gets a little dicier. Logic declares, for example, go with me, people, go with me, that it will be mathematically impossible for any of you to leave this church building today. Don't worry, I'm not going to tackle you. The ushers are not, you know, going to press shock sensors in your seats every time you try to move out of them. But here's what I mean. If I set up logic with my own frame of reference, I can make my own rules. See, logically, before you reach the back door, if I were to say, I want you to cover half of the distance. And then before you can go further, I want you to cover half of that distance. And then I want you to cover half of that distance and half of that distance. And then the distance is left, I want you to just cover half of that. But don't leave. You can't. If I only let you cover half of the distance, it might only be a micrometer or something even smaller. Caleb could tell us what the smallest thing would be. I don't know. But you would never get there if you set up the rules in order to keep people in their place. It's a fallacy. Truth is also not enthusiasm. Because I say something louder does not make it more true. Perhaps you heard about the church janitor who was cleaning the pulpit area one Sunday after a service and found the minister's preaching notes, and over in the margin, the preacher had written, "Your point here is weak. You better yell." Just because you say it more loudly doesn't make it more true. Truth is also not a deposit of knowledge. In other words, we have more knowledge than almost ever before today. And thanks to the internet and thanks to other technology, we have better access to all of it. In many places, part of that knowledge contradicts other parts. But even when it does not, no one ever agrees to yield final answers. Have you noticed that? When it's really heated, the body of knowledge is wonderfully useful and helpful that's out there, but it itself cannot help settle the disputes as to what is truth across the board. Finally, truth is not certainty. You know, people who declare they have a corner on the truth usually are very certain about their claims, and they are almost always certainly wrong. Perhaps then, Pilate asked the wrong question. Instead of what is truth, he would have done better perhaps to ask, how is truth? Or who is truth? Our faith says that God is ultimate reality, ultimate truth. And for Christians, Jesus was an expression, the highest expression of truth that leads us, that points us towards God and towards the truth. So the question, what is truth, comes from a seeking mind, but the answer is only found by a seeking heart. God cannot be grasped by the gropings of our minds, no matter how hard we grope. But God, truth, to say it another way, can be experienced by people who, through the depth of our commitment to love God, to love the truth, and to love our neighbor, live it out. Now, let me back up and go right back there in a minute. I read a true story this week as I prepared for tonight's message that actually happened several years back at Trinity United Methodist Church in Youngstown, Ohio. There was a custodian named Katie Johnson, and she had served in the position as church custodian in Youngstown, Ohio for more than 40 years. And the church had a policy long in place that provided a pension for long-time employees whenever they retired. Now, the policy specified that the person had to be 65 years of age in order to receive their pension. And when Katie said she was ready to retire, there was a problem. For you see, Katie was a black woman who had been born to sharecropper parents in the Deep South back in the days when some county governments didn't even bother to record births of black children. And consequently, Katie had no proof of her birth date. In fact, she was not absolutely sure just how old she was herself, though it was likely that she was at least 65, based on several bits of information. In any case, without a birth certificate, the church trustees who oversaw the pension plan were in a bit of a quandary about how they should proceed and make sure it was legal and so forth. But that was solved very quickly when one of the trustees did the following at the meeting. He said, "Look, Katie earned this pension, and we all want her to have it. I move, as far as we're concerned, that for purposes of retirement, Katie Johnson is 65 years old." Another trustee immediately seconded the motion, and the affirmative vote that followed was unanimous. Katie retired. Katie received her pension, just as she should have, along with a celebration with hundreds in attendance in her honor because she'd become so beloved over the years. Now, You could certainly argue that the trustee's action did not establish truth in the absolute sense, and you know something? You would be right. But I maintain that their action was the most loving, most Christian thing they could possibly do. They were not saying they had a corner on the truth. In other words, we know exactly how old Katie is. But their actions, here we go, belonged to the truth. Are you with me? It was something that Jesus would have done. It was about the spirit of the truth. It was a kingdom kind of behavior. Now, likewise, my friends, we who act in love also belong to the truth. For truth is not something we can ever own or corner the market on or finally have it all down in our minds and say, now I've got the truth. But we belong to truth when we live out the high calling of love. We will not find truth by going deeper and deeper into our heads, but rather by living out the love that is already in our hearts. For truth is not something we can ever manufacture in theory and then hang on to, but rather truth is something we discover by living it out and practicing the way of Jesus, the truth. The world does not need one more theory. The world does not need one more hypothesis when it comes to the truth, one more notion, but the world is starving for love. And when we love, we belong to the truth. And when we belong to the truth, we no longer have the burning desire to prove others wrong in order to proclaim our own rightness. But instead, we can love others from a calm place of assurance because we know that the highest expression of what we say to believe about the truth is the way we treat each other, every single other. What is truth? Shh. Don't tell me. Show me. Amen.